With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
G'day, g'day. He is dead right. This is Chris Smith, back on air in 2023 on the global talkback station TNT Radio. I hope you're well. I'm fighting fit today. I hope you're sitting down, though, for most of the show, because there are some stories we need to cover which are likely to make you stand up and say, enough. Absolutely had a gutful. Now, I'll tell you about the latest idiocy in the area of transgender policy. We've done it 2 days in a row. Why not three? Despite all the unbiased biologists telling us that sex is binary, that there is only man or woman, the medical fraternity of all sectors are pushing to make birth certificates fluid. Yes, fluid, as in you can change them. If you feel like a woman, let's classify you at birth. Not as a biological man, but a woman. Extraordinary stuff. On the climate front, one Federal Bureau of Meteorology has been caught out big time this week, using fake temperature records to prove that its country is warming. There's been a three-year battle over this, a three-year battle to prove it. And I'll speak to global warming skeptic Jennifer Massahasi, who will explain why it is a victory for climate truth. Jennifer will join us shortly. We're looking at the finances of the world on the show today through the eyes of Mike Shedlock, an investment advisor with Mishtalk. We'll look at whether the United States, and hence the rest of the Western world, is heading into the R word, recession. And what chance is there that we'll all be trapped into the vortex of a central bank digital currency? I tell you what, all you have to do is listen to the treasurers of the world, and it looks as if we are heading in that direction. And there are so many reasons why this is bad. So we'll talk to Mish shortly on the show. Also today, our feisty regular commentator, Prue McSween, is ready to pounce on two left-leaning Australian premiers who've both been caught red-handed treating either bureaucrats or former government ministers appallingly. You've got to hear how much they have been caught out, one on a microphone and one by an anti-corruption commission. That's about as caught out as you could possibly be. And the ever-increasing trend of visa overstayers. These are the people that come out to Australia and they pretend that they're on holidays or they're about to study. But all of a sudden, out of the blue, they're in an administrative tribunal trying to convince the tribunal that they are legitimate refugees and using the courts, not just one raft of courts, but several raft of courts to stay in the country. It's become the key entry point for illegal stayers. Forget about leaky boats. Forget about leaky boats. The tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands, are coming on planes. All of that with Prue McSween and a stack of other bits and pieces too. You can be part of the conversation. I'd love you to jump on our talkback lines and have your say. Get it off your chest. I don't bite. Here are the numbers. From the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026, or Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310, 1-800-670-310. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live from our studios in Sydney on the Global News Talk Network, tntradio.live.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I want to get you the nuts and bolts of this major court loss by Fox News shortly over voting at the last presidential election. I'll get to those details shortly. But I make no apologies for dedicating the start of our program for two consecutive days now on the outrageous government policies concerning new transgender rules creeping into bureaucracies, such as within the adoption framework and education in particular in numerous regions in the United States. Now, you may have heard from Jessica Bates on this show Monday. If not, can I suggest you go to episodes? That's the section you gravitate to on the tntradio.live website. You've got to hear Jessica Bates. And then yesterday, how incredible was that Californian parent calling out his kid's school for allowing their academic results to collapse? Oh, but very good they are at creating a transgender policy, which has to be followed to the letter, which parents are kept in the dark over. This is 2023 for you, where the infatuation to include minority groups in mainstream discriminates against the majority. That's what 2023 is all about, and that's why we are here to out it. And today, I want to bring you round three. Look what's happening in the medical profession. The American Medical Association has only recently campaigned for the removal of a baby's sex as a legal designation on their public birth certificates. Yes, just in case you missed it. The mighty influential AMA says requiring a description of sex on birth certificates can lead to discrimination and unnecessary burden on individuals whose current gender identity does not align with their designation at birth. Their designation at birth is not a measurement of how they feel. The AMA is concerned that the burden will be amplified when children register for school or sports, when they adopt, when they get married, or request personal records. How screwed up is this logic? But it's not from some extreme transgender activist group. It is the AMA, for heaven's sake. And this has been mooted in Australian states as well by the lefty lovies in Labor. Now, the report authors say a person's sex designation at birth will only be submitted to the US Standard Certificate of Live Birth for medical, public health, and statistical use. Now, the fact that they would include medical and public health indicates to me that they don't have a problem admitting that that person was born a particular sex and needs to be treated in that fashion. But no. Let's make sure the policy does not align with any of that, with the facts, with science, with biology. Oh, no. This is going to be a fluid descriptor, open to alteration. According to the report, 48 states, Tennessee and Ohio are the exceptions, and the District of Columbia, allow people to amend their sex designation on their birth certificate to reflect their gender identities. But only 10 states allow for a gender-neutral designation, usually X, on birth certificates. 48 states. This is happening today. Despite the biological evidence, which we ascertained on the show last week, if you were listening, that there are only two sexes, male or female, and that remains the case for life. Despite those facts, the AMA of all associations says assigning sex using binary variables in the public portion of the birth certificate fails to recognize the medical spectrum of gender identity. Garbage through and through. Talk to any unbiased biologist about this, and they will say clearly to you that sex is binary, one or the other, and for life. Irrespective of what chemicals you inject, hormones you inject, appendages you excise, it doesn't matter what you think you are. Meanwhile, teachers in Queensland, Australia, are being forced to call their students two different names if they change their gender or pronouns, according to a leaked email revealed this week by the Daily Mail. The email said that under the Human Rights Act, teachers are required to use a child's preferred pronouns and names in the classroom. The Human Rights Act. As if it's not hard enough to teach a rowdy class of students in 2023. Teachers not only need to follow who identifies as whatever in every single lesson, but it gets more confusing because the email also states teachers are also expected to use their birth name in official communication with their parents. Now, this, of course, gets back to keeping parents in the dark because school staff and parents at that school across the state are said to be concerned that such a convoluted policy could lead to teachers keeping secrets from the parents of children who don't want their identities to be known. Well, that's exactly what the rule caters for. It gives the teachers an out. So it becomes a very personal decision to transition, but you keep it between child and teacher. Certainly not the parent. They're only the parents. Protect the transition of children from one sex to another and treat parents like mushrooms. Keep them in the dark and feed them, you know what. The Department of Education in Queensland said that it may be best for a school to keep a child's wishes secret in some cases, particularly if the child's family has certain religious beliefs. No, 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 no. They are children. They are under the care and protection of their grown-up adult parents. Kids should never have this unlimited right to transition to change their sex. They are kids. These are two further examples of screwed-up transgender policy infiltrating the lives of the most vulnerable. Why can't governments, politicians realise that a sane, sensible, and responsible community does not allow children to be that untethered? It is a recipe for lifelong chaos. But look at the Biden administration. This month, it proposed a policy where schools and colleges across the country would be forbidden from banning transgender athletes at all, in sport, on campus, in bathrooms, you name it. I'm sorry, but this is all just gross virtue signalling. It's woke policy, which ignores the biological facts. It is wrong. What are your views on this? How steamed up does this make you feel? Do you sense that you now live in a new parallel universe? I do. This is TNT Radio.
Unbiased and reliable news coverage.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are going to talk about the shaky world economy that we live in at the moment and how shaky it might be very shortly. But I want to just give you the facts and figures related to the Fox News loss in court today. Fox News has settled with Dominion Voting Systems, a $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit. Now, this was against the Rupert Murdoch-owned organization, which basically averts a very lengthy, embarrassing trial where Dominion was going to get the hosts of Fox News in the box. It was all going to get very messy, and that's exactly what Fox did not want. So, the parties have resolved their case, was the announcement from Delaware Superior Court Judge Eric M. Davis. He told the court Tuesday afternoon, offering no details, news of the settlement was strategically made public right before Wall Street ceased trading for the day. Now, Fox paid Dominion $787.5 million under the deal. That is the biggest defamation payout in the sector of media in the United States history. Fox has admitted, according to Dominion, to telling lies about Dominion that caused enormous damage to our company, our employees, and the customers we serve. That was from the CEO, John Poulos. He says nothing can make up for that. Now, Fox News is not required to air an apology or retraction, and I was watching Fox News today. There was very little said, and I say very little because I didn't watch 100% of the nightly programs, but I heard nothing. However, Fox was quick to address the settlement in language that appears to walk back those claims amplified by some hosts and guests that the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump. And it said this: "We are pleased to have reached a settlement of our dispute with Dominion Voting Systems. We acknowledge the court's rulings finding certain claims about Dominion to be false. This settlement reflects Fox's continued commitment to the highest journalistic standards. We are hopeful that our decision to resolve this dispute with Dominion amicably, instead of the acrimony of a divisive trial, allows the country to move forward from these issues." Now, the judge determined that the claims made on air about Dominion were false, leaving it to the jury to decide whether the network was liable for actual malice. He also said to the jury to determine whether Fox Corp, not just Fox News, was liable. The Delaware judge also said he planned to appoint a special master to investigate claims that Fox had withheld evidence in the case. Now, that could have led to sanctions against the legal team, although one of its attorneys, I noticed, wrote a letter to the judge apologising and said it was a misunderstanding. Now, having settled this matter and a related defamation suit brought by Venezuelan businessman Majid Khalil on April 9, Fox still faces another massive lawsuit from another election systems company, Smartmatic, which filed a $2.7 billion lawsuit. You'd have to conclude that given the surrender today, as closing or as opening comments were about to be made, the same thing will occur with Smartmatic to the tune of close to $1 billion. Dominion and Smartmatic also have claims against two other conservative news outlets, Newsmax and One America News. That is a history-making result today, and one which flies in the face of what Donald Trump has been saying and what I've been saying as well, which is he's flogging a dead horse. Move on. Despite the fact that many of his supporters agree with what he was saying, but now we've got this case which belies the lies, well, he's got to move on. If he wants to win the 2024 presidential election, he's got to talk about things he's going to do to America, not talk about things that happened at an election now 3 years ago. We'll take a break. We're talking the economy right after that break. This is TNT Radio.
George Eliason on TNT Radio.
I mean, can you imagine, you know, if it was a Pentagon leak, could the Russians get in there and do it? Well, no, not really. We're also looking at a problem with authentication with these documents. If you listen to the War of the Worlds broadcast Saturday with me and John Helmer, John talked about, you know, the authentication part really deeply, because if these documents were all passed around at the same meetings, they should all have the same classification on them. And the classification is up and down all over the place, from top secret secret to, you know, it's kind of secret, but don't show foreigners, to, you know, okay, it's, you know, secret, but, you know, publish it widely to people with the clearance. It's classification is everywhere. So the odds of it, you know, some parts of it probably, but other parts of it definitely not.
George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, a record 69% of the United States public holds negative views about the economy both now and into the future, according to the latest April CNBC All-America Economic Survey. Now, the Biden administration has much to blame, so it's no surprise to see this same survey. And on the subject of the president's approval rating, it has dropped by 2 percentage points to 39%. When you get into the 30s, as most politicians will tell you, start quaking in your boots. So is the United States in recession already? Bear in mind the figures that you get on a regular basis, you really have to backdate by about 3 months in most situations. But let's not argue definitions. One thing is clear. We're in unprecedented economic times. My next guest, no doubt, has views on where we are headed. Mike Shedlock, or Mish as he's known, is a registered investment advisor for Sitka Pacific Capital Management. On his Mish Talk Global Economics blog, Mike writes several articles a day on the global economy. Mish, good to have you on TNT Radio.
Be on TNT Radio, and this is a good time for me, actually. I'm a night owl, so it's I'm in St. George, and it's well, Central Time is 11:23, 10:23 my time. So I'm not a morning person, so I'm happy to want someone talk to me at this time of night. So it's a pleasure to be on the show.
You can hoot if you want to. I love it. We need more like you. Is the United States heading into a recession, or is it there now?
That's debatable. A couple of times I've thought that the U.S. was in recession. Now, it wasn't earlier this year when The U.S. Had negative GDP for the first two quarters, because that's not what the NBER, the National Bureau of Economic Research, that's the official arbiter here in the United States. They don't look at it that way. There were several things that didn't look like it that way. But mid-year June, we had a huge fall off in retail sales, a big housing slump that's continued to this day. I thought we were in recession then, and lo and behold, in the third quarter, spending picked back up, and in the fourth quarter, it went down the gutter again, and then in January, out of the blue, for some reason, spending went back up. So we've just been flirting in and out of recession for quite some time. If you look at housing, housing's definitely in a recession. If you look at industrial production, that's in recession. Manufacturing has kind of gone to hell. Retail spending is flirting in and out of recession. But if you look at GDP, it's actually done pretty good. If you look at gross domestic income, which I think is more accurate right now, it signals we're in recession. So which signal do you want to believe? That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, good summary. Many economists anticipate a severe rise in the unemployment rate in coming months. I must say, just in the tech sector, gee, we're seeing some numbers being shed. What's your view about unemployment?
I think we're going to see the opposite of the COVID recession. In the COVID recession, we had a very short recession. I think it was only 2 months, didn't even last a quarter. But we had the biggest rise in unemployment, and it was understated all the way to 14%. I think more accurately, it was more like 20. And the BLS admits itself that the numbers were understated. The Fed admits the numbers were understated. I think we're going to have the opposite of that. I think the housing slowdown is going to be the opposite of what we saw in 2008. It was very sharp, very fast in terms of price and transactions. Now prices are elevated. We don't have the same number of liar loans that we had back in 2008. People are sitting in their houses. You know, they refinanced at what, 2.5% or 3%, and mortgage rates are now 6.5%. And, you know, unlike, I think, Australia, where you have variable rate mortgages, we have fixed rate mortgages here, you know, that people have locked in for 30 years. They're not going to trade that 2.5% mortgage.
Not a chance.
So we've got a slowdown in housing transactions, but not in price. Prices are starting to come down, but nowhere near as fast as they go up. But guess what? You don't buy a house. You keep renting. You don't buy appliances for that house. You don't buy carpet. You don't buy paint. You don't buy lawnmowers or landscaping, or anything else that goes into that house. That's going to be a drain on the economy for a long time. But we have boomers retiring, so there are 20 million people in the United States of retirement age. Are still working. You can have, what, say, let's say a quarter of them retire? Well, that's 5 million people who left or are no longer employed, but they're not unemployed either. So all of those things lead me to believe we're going to see the opposite of the COVID recession, long, drawn out, in and out of recession, perhaps for years. The Fed brought this on to themselves by keeping interest rates too low too long, and the ridiculous amounts of QE going on to the bitter end is payback for all of that, Chris.
All right. There are some threats to the US dollar, though. You've got the rise of the BRICS group of nations. You've also had the unveiling this week of the Unicoin, the Universal Monetary Unit, known as the Unicoin, unveiled at a major IMF gathering last week. Do you see both of those as a threat to the US dollar?
Neither of them is. Something else is, and we'll discuss that. But, you know, let's look at the Brazilian president came out, and he was, you know, calling for an end of the dollar. I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. Lula da Silva wonders, this is a direct quote, "Every night I ask myself why countries are forced to trade in the dollar Why can't we base trade on our own currencies? He's missing a fundamental point here. No one is forcing anyone to trade in the U.S. dollar. It's voluntary. And the reason why it's voluntary is countries don't trade. The U.S. doesn't trade with China as a country. Individuals and corporations trade. Here's an example that I posted on my blog. You know, we've got a soybean producer in Brazil who sells soybeans to China. Maybe we've got a Brazilian car or motorcycle manufacturer, you know, buying batteries from China. But, you know, look at it as on an individual basis. So, you know, the soybean producer selling soybeans to China, a Chinese merchant, what does he want the one for? You know, and from the other side, the buyer in China who's buying those soybeans, you know, what does he want the Brazilian real for? So when you think of, you know, we've got these trade deficits, you know, the country, that's just a summation of all these individual transactions. But the merchants, since, you know, the Brazilian soybean farmer doesn't want the yuan, and the Chinese counterpart doesn't want the real, the producer of the batteries, you know, so that's what's going on here. So no one is forcing this. It's by choice that people choose the dollar because it is the, you know, most liquid currency. The yuan doesn't even flow. Why would someone want that?
Yeah, exactly. That's the most enlightened insight into what's happening in terms of the US dollar I've ever heard. Can I just ask you to pause for a second, because I've left the best to last, which is the central bank digital currency. We'll talk about that. I want to take a break. I've got to get some news headlines right here on TNT Radio.
Great news.
Good news, everyone.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Despite receiving over $1 billion in government funding, Canada's state broadcaster has kicked up a stink over Twitter's decision to label it a government-funded outlet. The US Department of Defense has admitted it has no idea just how many documents were leaked from the Pentagon. And Elon Musk has revealed the US government had an all-access pass to people's private Twitter messages before he bought the social media platform.
You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Oh, isn't that interesting? The Canadian Broadcasting Association, basically the Canadian government broadcaster, is screaming the joint down about what Elon Musk has done on Twitter. They've been described as a government-funded media outlet, just like the BBC, just like NPR, just like ABC in Australia, as they should. We need to know what their affiliation is. It's that simple. And if you want to prove that you're not affiliated with the government, well, just be independent, be unbiased. That's the best way to convince your audience. I want to get back with Mike Shedlock, Mish, from Mish Talk. We're talking the economy. I've left the best to last. Mish, are you concerned about central bank digital currencies undermining our freedom?
Certainly am. They're going to use it to track, you know, every penny. You know, my big fear, and we've seen it in the U.S., we've had economists here proposing that to raise inflation, and now they want the opposite, of course, of making money expire so people can use it. Who knows what they're going to do if everyone is forced down this regime? You know, they're going to track every penny, tax it, potentially, you know, make you spend it or lose it. Those are all the things that have been proposed. We're marching down that path. You asked me another question, though, about central bank launching this or the IMF launching this digital currency. They've come out and denied that. And the denial is actually credible, Chris, because what happened is this Digital Currency Monetary Authority went to an IMF meeting, interviewed someone, and then claimed that the IMF read their paper and was promoting this. It doesn't make any sense, nor would the U.S. want to be involved in this. Every central bank is going to want to promote their own currency, no one's going to want to relinquish their authority over to, you know, some literally unknown agency that just started, you know, 2 years ago. So that's not going to happen. However, we can see what's happening here, Chris, and it goes back to the BRICS, which you asked me about, getting together, and I gave you my answer why it's not problematic now. Hmm. But the reason we're seeing this is the U.S. weaponized the dollar. When they confiscated, you know, Russians' dollar reserves, China is asking itself, might the U.S. do that to me? Brazil has the same concern. India. So, you know, that's what this is all about.
Yeah,
and they're going to come up with a way to get around SWIFT, to get around U.S. sanctions. The Fed unleashed this, you know, on itself. That's what we're seeing here with all of this talk here about how to trade in something other than dollars. Well, I gave you the reason why it's going to last for a while, but that is the force behind all of this, is the U.S. weaponized the dollar. It's going to backfire at some point, just not right now, Chris.
I love your analysis. I love that you're a night owl in particular, and I think you'll be on this program again. Mike Shedlock, Mish, thank you so much for your time.
A pleasure to be on the show. Have me back anytime. I'll be happy to give you a piece of my mind, Chris.
I love it. It's so informative. The complex being made simple. That's what we want. We all want that from Mish Talk, the global economics blog. Mike Shedlock, good to have him on the show. I want to get to Jennifer Mahahasi very, very shortly. But while we're on the topic of economy, I do want to squeeze this in. This is out of Washington. 9 more states, including Michigan and Nebraska, have joined a U.S. Department of Justice lawsuit against Google, alleging the search and advertising company broke antitrust laws by running its digital advertising business, the department. Now, the states joining the lawsuit were Arizona, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Washington, and West Virginia. The Biden administration, which filed the ad tech lawsuit in January, along with 8 states, says Google should be forced to sell its ad manager suite because it illegally abused its dominance of online advertising. Google has denied any wrongdoing and has asked the US to dismiss the lawsuit. I get a feeling that won't be happening. I hope you enjoyed my 2-part conversation yesterday with Mark Morano from climatedepot.org. He's also a colleague here at TNT Radio. I had some terrific feedback in emails and on various social media platforms as well. He's a walking, talking encyclopedia, Mark, when it comes to climate. Well, today, a part 3 of sorts on one of the most revealing gotchas we've ever seen on what we consider to be factual temperature records from the past. A dispute over how the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia records daily temperatures has just led to an embarrassing admission. The Bureau has been forced to release more than 1,000 pages of data that show new temperature probes can record different temperatures to old mercury thermometers in the same location at the same time. Now, the documents released after a years-long Freedom of Information campaign show temperature measurements taken using updated BOM probes in automatic weather stations at the Brisbane airport site could be up to 0.7 degrees Celsius warmer than the temperature taken using a traditional thermometer at the same time on the same site. This, of course, backs up years of campaigning by climate skeptic Jennifer Mahahasi, who for a long time has been arguing that false temperature records have been used to claim that Australia is warming. I'm joined now by the aforementioned Jennifer Mahahasi. Jen, welcome to TNT Radio once again.
Thanks, Chris.
Wow, this is quite a victory. Why did it take more than 3 years after an FOI request was lodged by scientist John Abbott for the Bureau to release this data? The matter was even heard in the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. They did not want to make this data public, did they?
No, in the first instance, they said that it was too onerous to scan because the mercury readings are handwritten onto this form, onto the reports, and they've also handwritten the readings from the probes, and they said it was going to be too onerous to scan these forms that they themselves should have already digitized and analyzed.
Then,
John, I've actually been asking for this data back to 2015. John started in 2019 specifically for Brisbane. He previously tried to get data in 2017. So this has been ongoing for a long time. But first they said it was too onerous and there was no public interest. Then when John took it to the Information Commissioner, they said that the documents didn't actually exist. That's written down and stated that they don't exist. Then we finally got it to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. And on the one hand, they said the documents didn't exist. And on the other hand, they said there was no public interest. And they threw in there that it would be very onerous to have to scan any of the documents at all. And in the end, it was agreed they'd give us 3 years of data from Brisbane Airport, but they're actually holding 15 years of parallel data. So I'm not quite sure if your listeners understand what this parallel data actually is.
Please explain it. Yeah.
So if we go back a few decades, not only in Australia, but also in the US. So the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the US and also the Australian Bureau of Meteorology began replacing mercury thermometers traditionally used to measure maximum daily temperatures with these platinum resistance probes in automatic weather stations. And the probes are more sensitive to fluctuations in air temperature. And so they can record hotter than a mercury, especially, for example, at an airport where there might be, you know, hot bursts of air from a jet plane passing by. Now, what NOAA does in the US is they say that acknowledging that these platinum-resistant probes, that these probes are more sensitive, and because we want continuity with the old mercury, what we'll do is we will take one-second samples, but we'll average them over 5 minutes, and that makes them equivalent to the mercury. Now, I'm not sure if it actually does make it equivalent to the mercury, but at least that's what they say in the US.
Right.
Now, what our Bureau of Meteorology has done is said, look, we can custom make to our own design probes that will be equivalent to the mercury, and we're not going to numerically average. We're just going to take spot readings, and those instantaneous readings taken every minute, the highest of those in a 24-hour period will become the new maximum temperature, will become the maximum temperature for that day.
And they were caught out because despite their denials, the data existed. As a matter of fact, there's so much more data, there'll be more FOI applications, right?
Well, I would just like more people like you interviewing me and more, I guess, letters to the editor and outrage and the Bureau just to hand this over because, you know, FOI requests after 8 years, it becomes tiring. I mean, surely there really actually should be an inquiry into our Bureau of Meteorology, into the Australian Bureau of Meteorology. And we should, before then, though, have all the parallel data because there's parallel data for probably 38 different sites. It should be made available.
Well, it should be on a website somewhere. Every other corporation and agency and bureaucratic department transfer written records into digitalized records and put it on websites somewhere available to the public because at the end of the day, we pay these galoots.
That's correct. But they have been fighting for an awfully long time to not make the parallel data publicly available. And they'll probably continue to fight. But I just so hope that sooner or later they hand it over. The problem is once they hand it over, Brisbane Airport's for sure not the worst site and neither those 3 years that they've given us. But places like Alice Springs, we're probably likely to see that the probes are recording a lot warmer than the mercury thermometer because they tend to be record warmer in hotter and more arid environments.
Aha.
And what this might do is force the Bureau to move to numerical averaging, as is currently done in the US.
In the United States. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Bureau simply can no longer argue that we are warming to the degree at which they have long claimed. That's what this proves.
So this is the issue of the transition to probes. Now, additional to that, I think I've been on your program before talking about homogenization of the data.
Yep. So another program, but you've been with me. We've spoken about it at length. But do this, but explain this for our listeners who may not have caught up on that conversation.
So with homogenization, they take the data after it's been recorded by the probes and they adjust it. And they'll actually say that they sometimes have to adjust it because of the equipment changes, because of the change to the probe. But you know, with a change to a probe, and say they also say sometimes because we move to airports. But if you change to a probe or you move from a park to an airport, you would expect the temperatures to actually maybe be marginally warmer, especially if you're not numerically averaging. But what the Bureau does is they actually cool past temperatures. So, for example, for places like Darwin in Northern Australia, they drop down the temperatures by more than 2 degrees.
Well, that's just stupid because we know, especially when you go to heavily concreted areas, the warm air stays right where it is, protected by concrete, protected by structures like terminals, and that's why it's warmer there than it would be at a park 2 kilometres away.
And that you especially see that in the minimum temperatures. So a mean temperature, when they talk about the 1.5 degree tipping point, they're talking about a mean, which is the max and the min divided by 2. And I've done my analysis, and particularly with the probes, we've got the issue that the max is probably recording warmer. The minimum temperature, this what people talk about, urban heat island, how during the day the asphalt, the concrete, the bitumen absorbs the warmth and then re-radiates it at night. And of course, see that right through all the records from towns and cities in Australia.
And this is one of the reasons why we're probably living in a warmer climate, because of the amount of concrete and structure we have built in the last 60 years.
That's the case in cities. That's definitely the case in cities.
Yeah, of course.
And Anthony Watts has documented this in the States. Now, if you go to rural areas like our Murray-Darling Basin in Australia, they've introduced irrigation. And so you've actually got temperatures that have actually, you can see a trend downwards because, for example, cultivation of rice, you've got this cooling, evaporative cooling, all the water into the landscape. But guess what the Bureau does? It homogenizes that data. It says irrigation's not natural. We're going to change the temperatures as recorded from somewhere like Mildura and Deniliquin, places in Australia and make it so that in the past the temperatures were cooler. Never mind that back then we had terrible droughts and rabbit plagues and all sorts of things. And with the droughts and the denuding of the landscape, the temperatures were actually really a lot higher than they are now with the orchards and the rice paddy fields.
Fascinating comparison between temperatures in history and to today. Fascinating stuff. I do want to talk to you about the Great Barrier Reef. Can I just have a break and I'll come back to you, Jen? So important that we get to this. You've just been to the Great Barrier Reef and we should talk about it further. You know, at TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Climate models are continuing to forecast an impressive El Nino for this upcoming winter in the northern hemisphere, of course, summer in the southern hemisphere. And what is very, very interesting is how opposite this looks from last year. It's not so much that it's opposite in the El Nino areas, you're always going to get that, right? I mean, if you had a La Nina, then the El Nino comes on, and of course it's going to be warm there. But unlike last winter, the Western Indian Ocean is very, very warm. And this would suggest that perhaps this El Nino, even though it's going to be a major El Nino, is going to fall apart pretty quickly once the winter slash summer begins. But there are other things that are going on. The warm spot in the Pacific Basin is actually much further east in the upcoming winter season for the Northern Hemisphere, summer season for the Southern Hemisphere. And the Atlantic Ocean is as warm as you'll ever see it on a computer forecast. Last year it was warm, but not as warm as this looks. So there are really some contradicting signals here, especially for the Northern Hemisphere winter, which at WeatherBell we're already looking at. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Everybody's terrified of cancer, the big C. They don't want to talk about embarrassing things, so blood in their bowel motions, going more frequently, a persistent cough, losing weight. I remember a wee man who didn't come to my surgery for ages, and all he would do was apologise and say, "Oh, sorry, doctor, I know if I had come, I know you'd have got me sorted." We are not too busy. We are very, very keen to see our patients as soon as we possibly can. So please don't get scared. Get checked.
You're listening to Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's continue our conversation with Jennifer Marahasi. It's been an incredible victory to work out exactly the discrepancies between these different probes used to measure temperature, because there'll be more FOI appeals, there'll be more applications to have more data released, and the more data that's released, the more we can see the truth. And that's all people are asking for, the truth, especially Jennifer Marahasi. Now, Jen, let's talk about the endless debate about the Great Barrier Reef. You write in your blog this month that back in the 50s, it was only after Easter every year that resorts on the reef islands allowed tourists to visit and stay, because that was the official end of the cyclone season at the end of April. But it's accurate to report, is it not, that year on year since that time, contrary to what the climate alarmists say, we don't get the number or the intensity of cyclones that we used to get. Now, Jen, that's not consistent with the climate change narrative. What are you doing here?
So certainly, in my blog, jennifermarahasi.com, was referring to the 1950s, because that's when my mother lived and worked on Heron Island, which is quite a famous Great Barrier Reef island. Yeah. So there's the cyclone data from the 1950s would suggest exactly that, that there's no increase. The Bureau of Meteorology holds official cyclone data, not back to the 1950s, but back to the early 1970s. And that data unequivocally shows that both the number and the intensities of tropical cyclones in the Australian region are decreasing quite dramatically. So back in the early 1970s, we'd expect about, 16, 17 cyclones each year. And what we have now are usually around 10. So,
but hang on a second. This is what Greta Thunberg has got the irrits with the United Nations over. She is saying people are dying today because of the increase in the more extreme weather events like cyclones. We're getting more cyclones, Jen. What are you talking about? You can't just look at the data.
So maybe they've got some simulation models, some general circulation models, which are like playing computer games, which she may enjoy playing computer games. They do at the IPCC. So those models say that we should have an increase in both the number and intensity of cyclones since the 1950s. But the actual official data, and I can quibble with that data because I actually think it's on the high side for recently, but just taking the official data, we definitely have a decrease. Now, at the beginning of each cyclone season, come October each year in Australia, the Bureau puts out a media release saying that they're expecting that we're going to have more cyclones this season. They've been doing this for a long time. We're going to have more cyclones and they're going to be more intense. And you know what? At the end of the season, you add them up and then there's been less. And they've been less intense, but guess what? They don't put out a media release at the end of the season.
Isn't that interesting? So they're biased by deletion. They're biased by deletion, which is just as criminally, I think, impactive on what the mob think. So we go from data, we go from specific scientific data to anecdotal evidence. You actually went to the Great Barrier Reef earlier this month, specifically to the northeast of Cairns. Your anecdotal evidence of fish and coral, that also doesn't fall into line with the climate catastrophists.
Oh, it's beautiful out there. You know, I've been I'm 60 in a couple of months, and I've actually been going to the reefs off Cairns now since I was 7 years old, which is a real privilege, you know, to have been able to do that for, you know, to snorkel and dive those reefs, snorkel and scuba dive those reefs for 50 years. And they're just beautiful.
Do you reckon the fish have got friendlier? Do you reckon I'm serious about this. Do you reckon the fish have got friendlier? Because I remember going as a kid and I couldn't get fish where we went to, but going back to the same spot only recently with my grown-up kids, we saw fish that couldn't get out of our face.
See, there's all these green zones now, so you're not allowed to actually spearfish for them in the places that I took my daughter a couple of weeks ago. So I think they have got friendlier. And they come right up. I mean, it's quite amazing under the water. They just come right up and sort of say good day.
Yeah, I agree, because they're not endangered or they don't have an instinctive fright about what's about to happen meeting a human being, because they've grown up in an area where you're not in danger of being killed, I reckon they're friendlier. Anyway, that's not scientific, but scientifically you saw plenty of coral and plenty of fish, right?
I did, and I actually saw quite a lot of fish eating coral. Now, I know that's a politically incorrect thing for these fish to do, but parrotfish, and there's so many of them at the Great Barrier Reef, that's what they do. They eat coral all day long, and they just scrape it and bite it, and then they poop sand. And I don't know, one day they might be cancelled. What do you reckon?
They might be cancelled. I think you're right. I think you are absolutely right.
It's very politically incorrect to be touching corals, especially eating it. But, you know, Greta and others, they never talk about the damage done by these parrotfish to the corals.
No.
No.
They're part of nature, unlike human beings. We're not part of nature. Jennifer, it's so wonderful to speak with you, because I think this is a really pivotal time for catching out those who've run a narrative that isn't supported by the scientific facts. We spoke about scientific facts today, apart from revealing that fish are more friendly. And I appreciate your time for that, Jen. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Good on you. Jennifer Marahasi. How good is that? So firstly, the Bureau, after refusing to hand over data for 8 long years, hands it over, and it proves the suspicion that they can't get their temperatures right. It's incorrect data. So they can't presume that we're getting warmer in these places. Certainly not warmer to the degree in which they have claimed for all of those years. And secondly, the Great Barrier Reef. Don't you love it? I reckon they're getting friendlier. If you've been to the Great Barrier Reef recently and you reckon they were very friendly fish, give us a call. From the US and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. From Australia or New Zealand, especially if you've been to the Great Barrier Reef, 1-800-670-310. Let's go to space now. We've been right around the planet so far. Let's go to space. NASA television coverage is underway right now for today's spacewalk with Roscosmos cosmonauts Sergei Prokopyev and Dmitry Petlin. They're from Russia. The duo, with assistance from European robotic arm operator cosmonaut Andrei Fedyev, will relocate a radiator from the RASVET module to the Rorka Science module on the International Space Station coverage of the spacewalk, which is on NASA television, which you can find on the NASA app and the agency's website. How good's this? Imagine if we'd have had app vision back in the late 60s when we first walked on the moon and those other space jaunts after that. Imagine. Anyway, this pair will exit out of the Poisk module with a spacesuit with red stripes and another one with blue stripes. It'll be the fourth for Prokopyev and the second for Petlin. It is the third spacewalk at the station in 2023 and the 260th spacewalk for space station assembly, maintenance and upgrades. 260. It sort of happens. It's amazing. It's a miracle, but we don't kind of cover it anymore, do we? We just don't cover it. And a CEO has sparked international outrage today. Have you seen the video? After telling her employees in a leaked Zoom call to leave Pity City for complaining about not receiving bonuses. That's despite the woman paying herself $1.2 million last year. In the video, she is really, really upsettingly nasty towards her staff, and everyone is talking about it on social media. How can we stay motivated if you're not going to get us a bonus, said the staff. Some of them were nice. And she said, don't ask about what are we going to do if we don't get a bonus. Get the damn $26 million the company needs. Spend your time and effort thinking about the $26 million we need. So she can obviously get another $1 million in bonus herself. It is just appalling. Look it up. Have a look for the CEO sparking outrage over bonuses. It is awful. We'll catch up with Prue McSween next hour and a whole heap more right here at TNT Radio.